You are listening to episode 180. Yep, that's right. And how to pronounce Huey and other challenging words.
Episode 180 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March 8th, 2015. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough. The Apple Watch announcement is tomorrow. This is my brother James Furlough. Now back to the Apple Watch.
Jeez, man. You pumped about it or something?
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. I don't even want to talk about it tonight. I kind of want to be the last time I talk about it. But I haven't been this excited about the launch of a new piece of hardware since probably the iPhone 4. I mean, like, I'm stoked. I'm so excited.
Mostly because you're, like, pretty much virtually going to get it, right?
Yeah.
Or are you going to get it because you're so pumped about it?
Just a little column.
What's the causation here?
I'm going to get one because I'm so pumped about it, which gets me even more pumped about it. Of course, that's kind of how I thought I was going to get the iPhone 6 Plus, like, for sure, and ended up not getting it. So, but my level of pumpedness for the iPhone 6 was way less than where I'm at right now. I'm like, there's a part of me that every time I see an article, I click on it, or I decide I'm not going to read it so that I don't click on it. Because I'm like, I don't even want to know. I'm just going to get so antsy. And then 2.5 seconds later, I click on it and read the article. I can't help myself at this point. It's and the one thing I was concerned about, the one thing that I was just like going to be, I was going to complain about it, but I was going to be okay with it, was that I was pretty sure that the Apple Watch wasn't, the Apple Pay on the Apple Watch wouldn't work with my iPhone 5. I was like, positive they're going to make you upgrade to the 6 or the 6 Plus or even the 5S. Yeah. So basically, like, you know, if the iPhone can do it, your watch can do it. And Eddie Q and confirmed yesterday, it is not a requirement to have a 5S. It will work with the 5, so I get Apple Pay. It's done. It's done. I'm getting one. I can't wait. I'm so excited. Heart rate monitor, Bluetooth pedometer. I've got to finally get my Moto 360 back, but cooler because it's an Apple thing.
Yeah, it has definitely reached the old fever pitch, hasn't it?
Oh, heck yeah.
Just a couple weeks ago, we were talking about electric Apple cars, and, you know, it's like, nope, it's all good. We're back to where we need to be.
What I really like about it, too, is, like, I mean, it's even... They're going so far out of the way because even like so it's one of the subreddits I am embarrassingly subscribed to. That's not embarrassing. It's important. On Reddit is male fashion advice, and you know, just
why is that embarrassing?
It's not embarrassing.
It's good.
It's just you know, it's weird. It's just spend time looking at how to look good, but I do, and it's how we roll. Anyways, there was a...
You do look at how to look good, or you do look good?
Both.
Both. Okay.
Gotcha. I look at how to look good, so I look good. Ask my girlfriend. So that's a bad person to ask. It's a good person. But, you know, it's biased. If she said anything other than...
Watch out for that hole.
Exactly. One of my, I'm not sure if she started listening.
So on this subreddit about men's fashion.
Yeah, so the top thread today was about whether or not the Apple Watch looked cool or not. Is it actually fashionable? Which, I mean, the fact that it's that's the top link the day before the Apple, like the big time Apple Watch announcement, and it'll probably go on sale this week. Like, sure, there was a coincidence there. That wasn't paid, you know, viral marketing at all. Apple that was just convenient that managed to. I mean, it's ridiculous how big the marketing push on this stuff is. Apple's so good at that, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a big deal for a couple things, right? I mean, number one, they're the biggest company in the world.
Yes.
By more than a little.
Yes.
So, you know, anything they do is kind of a big thing. And this is genuinely different for them.
Right.
You know, both in product, but also in, it's no longer about technology and liberal arts. It's technology and fashion.
Yeah. Luxury and goods.
So that's a fundamental shift in how they view what it is that they're doing. And so that's a big deal.
Right.
Especially, again, for the largest company in the world. And so, it gets us all interested. Then it does genuinely look cool. You know, I think it looks cool. And I think everyone is like, I wouldn't mind touching one and playing with it.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's the end all be all of my fashion statement, but I'm curious. I'm intrigued.
Right.
Which is,
you don't look at it and go, what is that piece of garbage? You know, that's not your reaction. It's similar to the iPhone, where, like, you may not buy one, but you're like, I get it.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks good. I completely agree. But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about technology. Oh, wait.
Oh.
This week, you know what? I'm serious. I'm done talking about the Apple Watch, because I could talk about it day long, especially with it coming out tomorrow. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, if you want to bring it up, just know your Pandora's box is being cracked open.
All right. I'll crack it once later on in the show.
That's fair enough. Especially since this was a big week. It was like stuff happened. So
Mobile World Congress.
Exactly. Yeah. So speaking of which, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he's got to throw our way.
I work for HP, but do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Boom. Nailed it. So I bought more Apple stock, just sort of.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. I don't have enough money in my account to do that. Dang.
How much money do you have in your account?
$200.
You can buy a stock.
Oh, yeah. I can do it.
It's $1.25 right now.
You know, is that all?
Times 100, yeah. Is that all? Jeez. Who are you?
All right, I'm doing it. As during this podcast, you think it'll go up or down?
I think it'll go down, then back up.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right, come on. What is wrong with my password thing? There we go. All right, yeah, keep going.
What was I going to say about? So that's my disclosure. I own Apple stock. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're on the internet. We do stuff there. My Instagram is at nextwiggin4. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. I'm probably going to go out of my way to try to tweet from my Apple Watch when I get it this week or something like that. I've just got a good feeling that I'm going to be able to do that right away, right out the gate. So check that out, and yeah, it'd be awesome. Your turn.
I am an Apple shareholder now. Dude, that was scary easy.
I know.
By the way.
Tell me about
free,
it.
So I'll take it. Robinhood app, by the way. Let me see. James Furlow on the Twitter, on Instagram, jamesfurlow.com. Assuming my job actually gives me time, I may tweet.
Awesome.
I may not.
So just for the record, just so you know, before the split, the 7-to-1 split, the current stock price of Apple would be translated due to inflation of splits and whatnot. That's an equivalent of about $882 per share pre-split. Wow. That is a high stock price. Holy cowabunga.
Yeah,
so that'll be cool. If you want to know more about the show, we talk about all sorts of things on the show, all sorts of articles. Sometimes we'll play videos and sound clips and cool stuff like that. If you want to know more about it, go to the website there, furloughbros.com. That's what we do. We got the link to the video if you want to see our beautiful faces while we talk. Unless we got bad bandwidth, and then we turn off that part of the feed. If you're watching on YouTube and you want to,
it's like every other show.
Exactly. If you're watching on YouTube and you want to just listen via the podcast, go there. We got that link too. It's awesome. It's cool.
What episode is this again?
This is 180.
Wow. Half pie. That's crazy.
No.
It's pie.
Yes.
We're a pie.
The Taoists are going to get incredibly...
It's been too long since I've played around in the radiance world.
Half pie. Man, that was disappointing, James.
I'm sorry. Ugh. Pie. Got it.
Yeah, pie. 180 pie.
I've ruined it.
Yeah, I don't even want to go on anymore. You sucked it out of me, dude. Let's talk about something fun, like the Apple Watch.
Or not.
Okay, I'm going to talk about something that... So now that you've depressed me, it's my turn. I'm gonna go first, and I'm going to depress you.
Okay.
Maxis has been shut down.
Like the SimCity creators? Yep. Okay, so to be clear here, SimCity's not going away.
No. EA has confirmed that it will shut down the Maxis Emeryville, displacing the folks responsible for the aforementioned titles of The Sims and SimCity. It's been about 12 years since they've been bought by EA. They've been working together as a team, managing those titles. Those titles will continue to exist. They will just be shuffled around to some other studio within the EA universe, and those employees will be told to show up at their desk in Texas on Monday morning. Or wherever is far from where they are. I'm assuming they're being fired. But, yeah.
Wow.
End of an era. Maxis Studios used to be like them and Westwood, man. Those two were like, they were my childhood studios. They're the ones, and I realized that that barely means anything anymore as these studios shift and change and the personnel leave and they work for different stuff. It's like, especially once they're bought by a massive parent company, it really, they are a shadow of their former selves, and it's nothing but a brand name. And EA has decided that that brand name is either not able to produce good content or not valuable anymore. But either way, it's gone. I get the business side of it, but it's kind of depressing.
Yeah, it's not totally surprising given the financial woes that EA has been in that they're going to find ways to consolidate.
Yeah. Yeah, and, let's face it, Maxis opened themselves up for a bit of criticism with the launch of SimCity. It was not a stellar launch.
Yeah, but that had to do with EA's servers, not Maxis, whatever.
There was a couple of different... There were multiple parties at fault, I think. Especially the whole guff about it being... EA probably can take a lot of the blame, but... I have a feeling that...
Yeah, they can get it all. Well,
teamwork makes the dream work. There is no I in team. You know what I'm saying?
Teamwork makes the dream work?
Yeah.
Oh, my... Where did you hear that one? Oh, my gosh. That's so amazing.
Yeah.
And I know you didn't make that.
It was Armstrong and Getty. I don't give credit where credit's due.
Yeah. That's funny. Teamwork makes the dream work. Do you hear that, Jess? Teamwork makes the dream work. I'm gonna tell your boss that. That's gonna become his new mantra.
I know. It is awesome. It's so good. I say it all the time and it's becoming annoying. My girlfriend,
I love that so much.
I know. My girlfriend, who I have only been dating in the same country as her for 2 weeks, is already making fun of me for saying that as much as I do. At this point, she is now using it for comic relief because she realizes it's so expected. But pretty soon here, it's going to be annoying, and then I'm going to keep using it until it starts to become funny again because it's relentless. I'll be honest. For example, every Friday at work since the launch of Rebecca's Black, It's Friday, I've walked in and sung, "It's Friday, Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's waiting, everybody's looking forward to the weekend, partying, partying." And then one of my coworkers goes, "Yeah, partying, partying, yeah, fun, 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 looking forward." And we have done that dance every Friday for the last, like, 3 years. It's
wow.
It fully went through the, okay, this is funny, to this is really stupid, to I can't believe we're still doing this. Like, we're still doing this? Oh, my gosh, we're still doing this. Okay, it's kind of funny again. we're fully into the fact that we're still doing it is, in and of itself, kind of comical. Which are my favorite. Wow. Those are my favorite kinds of jokes. Anyways, that was a little too much about myself. So Max, this has been shut down.
That's right. I already texted that quote out to folks. So
that's awesome.
Go. I'm going to spread the dream through this teamwork that we have.
I like it. Yeah, so now that I have spread the sorrow of the death of my childhood, what do you want to talk about?
yeah, man. I'm not as broken up about that as I probably should be.
I was going to say, I'm in a great mood today. I don't know what's going on, but you are, like, taking it like a man. Nah, it happens.
So I started running again is probably part of it. I ran 2 miles. Two miles.
That's a lot of miles. That's more than one.
Dude. That's twice as much as one, yeah,
that is,
actually.
That is plural miles.
Yeah. Plural miles, yes. Yeah. Well, I figured I got to start training, and so just tacking on a mile a week.
What are you training for?
The Albany Half Marathon.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. And the trick is actually to get in shape before the baby.
Ah, so, yes. Yeah. Let it.
Do it after. Because the race is technically after. So.
Momentum. I gotcha. You're taking your time.
Yeah, dude. You know me. Baby. It's the slight edge principle. It works. But yeah, anyways, so I can take anything right now, and I didn't have to work today. That was kind of crazy too.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome to Sundays.
Yeah. It's been a while. What I wanted to talk about was the Stratos Bluetooth connected, payment card, I guess is the way to call it.
So it's like Apple Watch in your card?
No.
Okay.
Apple Pay in your card, is that what you meant?
Well, no, I mean, because my Apple Watch will let me anyways go. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's similar. So we talked a while back about Coin.
Yes.
That may sound familiar. Where you could virtually load cards on and so you could have a single piece of plastic that would have however many cards you want on it. I think it was like 5. And then all you do is select the one that you want, swipe, pay, good to go. So I'm just enough of a finance nerd where I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And I don't know if you have not noticed because you don't have your watch yet, but you can't use Apple Pay everywhere yet. And most annoyingly, Home Depot. Come on, guys. You have the terminals. It says swipe or tap. Just enable it. It's okay. Just enable it.
Gotcha.
But having said that, and P.S., I would say like every third time I try just to make sure.
Just to see. Just to see the state of things.
Yeah. I don't know. It still doesn't work. All right. So anyways, Stratos is making another one of those cards. Where, again, you can load on your all the cards that you want there. And what's cool about it is you can, like, do, like, this double tap of the card against your phone, and it'll open up the app for you. So you can select your card right there if you want to. Or it's got it has 3 buttons there that are already, like, pre-selected that you can, just choose right there. But what's also cool about it is it's not just credit cards. It's like any card that has a magnetic strip, load it on, use it, work, it'll work for you, which is pretty cool. So like loyalty cards and stuff are an example where
I jumped immediately to identification, but yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, that too, sure.
I'm not sure that'll work as well as I want it to since, your picture, but
yeah. So what's interesting about this too is the, kind of their revenue piece. So if you remember with Coin, it was $100 for the card, and you know, it uses Bluetooth low energy, but eventually if the battery runs out, you can't replace the battery, right. So you have to buy a new card.
Yeah, and the idea was that it would last a year or so.
Yeah, and so these guys are just like straight up going, it will last a year. Get over it. And so what we're going to do is we're going to charge you a membership fee of $95 a year or $145 for 2 years. And I was like, really? That's my discount for 2 years?
That's it? That's a 50% discount on your second card.
Exactly. I feel like it should be more. But anyways.
It's an actual piece of hardware. I mean, that's, you know, that's not...
Yeah, and the idea behind that is... as they upgrade new cards every year with new features and stuff, or if you lose it or whatever, they could just send you a new one.
That's not the idea. Oh, wait. They can send you a new one if you lose it? But it's only worth one card per year. It's $95 per card per year.
No, it's like a membership fee.
Right. If I lose my card after 6 months, do they send me another card for free?
Yeah. I don't understand.
If I lose four cards in the same year, they're just going to keep sending me new cards.
Maybe. I didn't look that deep into the FAQ.
That just seems incredible to me. It sounds to me more like it's in the line. Because, well, I guess maybe I'm wrong. I might be wrong. It's very possible. But I just sort of assumed the idea was that with Coin, the first $100 is easy. But... as people are excited about it, it's a new toy. But after a year, people go, it was cool, but was it $100 cool? No. And whereas this locks you into an automatic renewing thing, you get a new piece of hardware, and it just sort of becomes a, you know, set it and forget it, and you drop $100 into their bank account every year, whether or not you're using the device. And that's what that sounded like to me. If they're actually replacing them and giving you more regular updates, that's actually pretty cool. That's a different thing. If it's worth more than one card, then that's significant.
Okay, so I was just looking up to their FAQ online, and it says what's included with your membership.
Okay.
You get a personalized card and card reader and the mobile app. Cool. You get annual card replacement or upgrade. And then members are eligible for a complimentary upgrade or replacement on the first day of each renewal year, I guess. But so I think if I'm reading that right, you get one a year.
Yeah, that's what it sounds.
What does it say for additional fees? There are no additional maintenance or transaction fees. However, replacement fees for either a card, $49, or a reader, $15, may apply if lost or broken more frequently than once every 12 months, effective when you activate your membership.
So basically, if your membership is, yeah, it's an annual automatic card feed, and it comes with a discount on your second card if you buy two up front.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool. Yeah. It's cool. I get what they're doing, and it's a good strategy.
I just love the idea of, like, you can have one card.
Yeah, or you can have your...
And like, if you do lose it, you can unauthorize it pretty much on the spot from your app.
Yeah.
You know? So you could be, you know, so there's, it's a little bit more secure, which is nice.
Yeah. I'm watching the videos of it. It looks pretty cool. It's cool. It's definitely cool. I don't want to downplay the coolness of the technology. I just think it's archaic and going to be over. Now, it's funny. One of the reasons why I said I thought Coin was a good idea was because we said at the time, well, you're only going to, you know, we were like, is this really a good investment? How long are you really going to need this for before, you know, things like Apple Pay and Google Wallet just completely take over and completely replace it? And our answer was, well, maybe a year or two. And so the fact that the physical piece of hardware only lasts that long, you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But I have a feeling that Stratos is going to have a you know, they're going to have to expand the infrastructure of their, what they're capable of doing, as I feel like NFC and those solutions are going to start to replace theirs relatively quickly. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not wrong.
I don't know.
I mean, the membership card thing is something that is cool that they can do relatively quickly, but it just seems hard to believe that, you know, Apple Pay won't have support for that sort of thing even faster. And then the nice part about it is you'll be able to, like, you'll go into Safeway, because what they'll do is they'll just have the Safeway card readers will have some special programming where when you tap your button and you, like, ring your card, it'll also give, you know, it'll ask for membership card to Safeway, and then it'll ring it up and say, oh, yeah, you are a member. You know, that's how they're going to work around that, and it'll be even more automated. I guess if you don't have those solutions or you want the all-in-one, it makes sense now. I just personally would feel weird about, you know, signing up for an automatic renewal on a $100 piece of hardware that in 2 years will, you know, probably seem a lot more, a lot less useful, a lot less necessary. Also, I don't have any loyalty cards, and I have one debit card and no credit cards. So I already live my life as somebody like that.
Yeah, I understand. And I was definitely in that camp where I was like, I had my license and a card, and that was
it. Yeah.
My life has gotten a little bit more complicated now with other business stuff. So I find I've got, like, I guess I have 4 cards now. And which some people, I'm sure some people listen to this going, oh, great, 4, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, we are so the wrong market for this thing. I mean, that's the problem. And that's why I threw that in there at the very end, because I feel like...
But I love the idea of it.
It's cool technology. It's really great. And I actually think that there's going to be... I have a feeling that at some point there will be a resurgence of this. You're going to find that this is useful somewhere else. I don't know where yet, and I don't know what it would be useful for, but the idea of an independent physical piece of hardware that is Bluetooth enabled and has a magnetic strip that it can, you know, programmatically change, that seems compelling, whether it's for, like, security reasons or something like that. That seems like the sort of thing that would be cool and useful and has some sort of a lifespan outside of credit cards, but... It's a short-term solution to a bigger problem, and I think, you know, I don't think they're going to change the world. I think the world's already being changed around them by the Apple Watch.
Okay. All right. All right, Debbie Downer. That's cool.
I'm sorry. Everything is awesome.
I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. Well,
that's cool. Well, I guess I'm less bullish on the adoption rate of Apple Pay. But, I mean, it's one of those where as it gets into more hands and as the watch starts to take off,
yeah,
I don't know.
Just wait for tomorrow.
Yeah, then everyone will accept that it'll
be. Then you'll see. You know the worst part about tomorrow is going to be?
I don't buy enough. That's my other problem.
Yeah.
I need to buy more things.
Yeah, seriously.
I think that would help.
Your materialism is really hurting your lack of materialism is really hurting the American economy, James.
Yeah.
If you could do your part, we'd appreciate it.
Well, keep that in mind.
Thank you. That's all we're asking for is a little consideration, common courtesy. Yeah,
I'm more than happy to invest people's money. That's no problem.
There we go. You know what? The one thing that's really going to drive me crazy, James, is they're going to announce that the Apple Watch will go on pre-order in 2 weeks.
Instead of like Friday?
Yeah. Instead of it being like purchasable Friday afternoon, it's going to be like 2 weeks until you can pre-order it. I'm just going to go crazy. I think...
People keep talking about like April.
I know. That's the number. That's the date. Well, so Adriana... Manhurst with Ant
Box
no.
Open.
What's the chick's name who's in front of
Adriana Herenditz or
maybe that? Yeah. That sounds right.
So something like that.
I guess it is dismissive to call her a chick. Although I call guys dudes all the time, but the woman in charge of the Apple store, she's the one who threw out the title, the date of April. And she did it in a private call that got leaked out. That's why people are saying April, but a whole month ahead of the actual launch of the product. The only reason they would do that, and this would actually make sense to me, is if they wanted to, they are going to allow you to go on pre-orders and everything. They're going to go through the normal rigmarole. But the problem is they have acknowledged the fact that there's a lot of people like me who I've decided, despite your encouragement, I'm not going to pre-order it. I want to pick it up and try it first. Not because I'm afraid I won't get it. It's just that I want to get the right color. I want to get the right size. I want to try it.
That was my thought. There are a lot more customization options here, and it would be helpful to know what they need to make.
I have a feeling that what they want to do is they want to open up the Apple Watch stores that will be in fashion, in jewelry stores, in Apple stores, stuff like that. And I got a feeling that their whole deal is they want to open those up and unveil them like Friday, but not actually let you buy it until the Friday after that, and then not ship it till the Friday after that, which would put us solidly into April. And how did we get on the Apple Watch, dude? What were we talking about? See, I told you again, it's Pandora's box. I can't stop myself.
Yeah. Hear me? I said, and box opened. Yeah. I don't even know. Cause we were talking about the Stratos' card and how it won't be required.
There we go.
Put it on that track. All right. Back on track then. I love it. I was like, man, this is going to be an interesting transition. I wonder how he's going to pull this off.
Yeah. No, I had, he didn't. I had no plan.
He didn't. It's like, all right, that's cool. I'm going to go first. Question. For your daily consumption of information, what does that look like?
Three sources.
Where do you... Yeah, okay.
And one of those there's three sources. And ironically, all three of them are multiple sources.
Right? Okay. And like, is this phone, computer, add that in there too?
Everything. Reddit, feed, okay. So, well, yeah, then okay, there's Reddit and primarily on my phone.
Establish that.
Yes. And that's mostly pop culture, goofy, stupid stuff. Feedly, which is my fire hose. That's just like, that is a bunch of different feeds, tons of articles. And that is much more of like, I am sitting down and trying to get as much information as I can, completely uncurated. I do the Facebook tech stuff, on there.
Really?
Yeah. I actually use paper.
On paper.
Yeah, and use their tech page. I find that's pretty good for asking the question of what does everybody else care about? Like, there's oftentimes I find that what I personally think is important doesn't necessarily mesh up with what the public does, and so I want to know when what I care about is boring everybody else, so I don't bore them to death if I can avoid it. Right now, everything is Apple Watch, which makes me excited.
How do I get to that again? You have to remind me here.
On paper?
Let's see. On paper, I open ZipUp, and then...
You just swipe to the
app. That is a weird cat.
You just swipe.
Just swipe? Which way?
You swipe your thumb to the left.
No. I'm not doing it right.
Yeah, okay, so...
These are all regular people updates.
Oh, no, not on the bottom. Not on the bottom, on the main picture.
Oh, at the top.
Swipe to
the right. Look at that. I have it.
And then
I have it set up.
Yeah. Tech. You can edit the section so you can have multiple ones like they've got.
Yeah, I literally have three. I have tech and then ideas. And I have no idea what
ideas are, ironically.
Ideas are. Yeah.
I
think it's like a science thing.
Yeah, I got scores. I do tech trending scores, headlines, all, and ideas, and I only ever look at I only ever look at tech and occasionally trending. But because you know,
yeah, okay. Gotcha. Reddit, and you said primarily on your phone.
Yeah. Reddit primarily on my phone. Paper obviously is exclusively on the phone. Feedly almost exclusively on the computer. And then for the rest of my kind of politics, I listen to AM talk radio, because that's what adults do.
Okay, interesting.
Or at least that's my perception as a child.
If you're into finding something new, are those still your primary sources?
What do you mean? Like I'm bored with life and I just want to sort of see what's out there?
What's new that's out there, yeah. Like, let's start with this. This will be a throwback, which will be interesting. Where did you first read about the dress?
Well, that one was weird because I landed.
Oh, that's right. You were.
I was in the air over the entire thing, but it was Reddit. Reddit is normally the thing that pops.
Okay.
Yeah, Reddit for me is normally the thing that pops new information. It is the front page of the internet, after all.
It's true.
Yeah, that is normally with my just kind of random browsing. But even that is.
I tried to get into Reddit this week, and I just like every time I try, I can't do it. I don't know what my problem is. I see the value of it. I'll be on it for like 5 minutes ago. Okay, I'm done.
And a change of life, man. Number one, subscribe and get out of the default. Some of the default subs are cool.
Yeah, I got
but
some.
It gets really
I got some subreddits. Here, I'll tell you what I have.
Okay, perfect.
Sorry, what?
But this is the other thing that's going to change your life, man. Reddit Enhanced Suite. It's a Chrome plugin. You know, like
using Safari.
I think Safari has it too.
See, I've got. Let's see here. My subreddits. Advice Animals. Sounds like it's pretty good. I got Landlords, Movies, Pebble, Real Estate Science, Sim City. There you go.
Nice.
Technology today. I learned videos. Let's see here. Financial independence. Awe. Ask Reddit. IMA. I don't even remember what that is.
Ask me anything.
Ask.
IMA. Whatever.
That
ask
doesn't
me
say
anything.
Ask me anything.
Well, it's I. Yeah.
Picks. Apparently. So. I don't know. I just struggle with it.
So the Reddit Enhanced Suite actually, I think, is a big improvement.
It enhances it.
Yeah. It changes the formatting of the webpage. It does some stuff to like it adds users features and enhancements that are not included on the site on purpose. There was sort of this movement to keep Reddit looking dumb forever. They intentionally don't overhaul the site to a more usable format on purpose. And Reddit Enhanced Suite is sort of a way to fix that. But
I guess I get confused a lot of people, where it's like I'll click on a link and it takes me to it, which I guess is fine. And that's the other, it doesn't. It replaces the page. It doesn't do it in a separate one.
Oh, so one of the nice parts about Reddit Enhanced Suite is that it like, well, I think that's a setting on your browser, isn't it?
No. Well, no, because you can. Well, I mean, I suppose you could change it, but most sites figure it out for you. But anyways, but sometimes it's like I want to see the. How do I describe this? Like the link and or the summary and the comments in one page.
If it's like a picture and stuff, Reddit Enhanced Suite fixes that because it allows you to like expand the pictures and you can do that in the comment page. Yeah, it's not perfect, okay? What is the point of all of this? Hey, if people are listening that they...
Oh, yeah, yeah. All right. I don't know. I thought that was genuinely a helpful little tangent there. But anyways, okay. So to recap here real quick, it's primarily on your phone, Reddit, Feedly, paper, right? No. Feedly's on the browser, which is interesting. I actually really like the phone one a lot more than the browser, but that's a
really?
Different thing. Yeah. Yeah, I will find myself, like, wanting to catch up on the news and be sitting at my computer and go, no, I'm not doing it on my computer. I'll use my phone.
You know what my problem is with Feedly on the phone is I have not figured out a way to save links for later in a way that is really quick. Whereas because of the reason I do it, I actually like the Feedly app. It's just that so much of my content, I take the link from the webpage and put it into our show notes that and I do that very quickly. And I haven't figured out a quick way to do that on the phone, but
okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. There isn't one.
Yeah.
Which is why I do Instapaper and then over to it later on. But anyways, okay. Cool. This is helpful. So I have a bigger topic, but I want to kind of do it on the back of some news this week, which is that Google is dividing yet again they're dividing up Google Plus, and it will now be three separate services: Photos, Streams, and that other one,
which
we're using right now, Hangouts. There we go.
Which, for the record, was predicted on the For the Bros Tech podcast.
Boom. Yeah. So it turns out they're going to do it, and they got new people in place to run it and all that stuff. And so they're going to do it, and you know, we'll hear more about it later. It sounds like Streams will be de-emphasized. Photos will play a much bigger role and integrated with Android, and same with Hangouts. That will like. It sounds like from an Android perspective, like Hangouts will become your phone and your IM and video, and you know, that will become your communication place, which sounds genuinely cool. And it'll be cross-platform and all that stuff. You know, leave it to Google to have big dreams. I like it. And I think it's cool. But I'm thinking about like the Streams is where I want to focus the attention here, and that coming off on its own product type of thing, and all that to say that I read another article that was talking about the trouble with social, and I found this was interesting that they said Google has entered another period of languishment, and they've done this a couple times, like back in 2007. The company's stock reached $3.58 a share, and then it dropped in 2008, and it needed another 5 years to exceed that peak. And then once it did, Google rallied 71% over the next 18 months and rised as high as $6.14, and you know, which is pretty high. And since then, they've drifted sideways to down yet again, and so they're kind of back down again. And his point being that Google goes through these very long cycles where they'll come up with something awesome and they'll pop and do really, really good and then just kind of sit there for a while and, you know, and slowly dwindle.
Right.
And they're saying, like, right now, one of the things that they're dealing with is shrinking ad revenue, you know, which would make sense. That's why you're... stock price would start to fall, and that's like your primary source of revenue. They said one of the things they've been struggling with is that YouTube is struggling to break even, and honestly they're having trouble getting people to actually visit youtube.com. People are visiting, right? When, let's be clear, when they say trouble, it's like, well, instead of 1.5 billion, it was only 1.4 billion.
Right. Well, the issue is how their finances work with YouTube. They make most of their money from people that actually go to youtube.com and watch the videos there. Embedded links, they look at it as kind of a way of advertising is the wrong word, but it's a way of bringing people to YouTube, or that was the intention of it. They don't make much money off of it because it's not part of their holistic advertising solution for YouTube. And so the problem is that although a lot of people do watch, the particular user base that uses YouTube, although relatively loyal and relatively large, they're very, very static and consistent. And so they're getting it, just all the number, like where Facebook, there's not as much resonance time on Facebook, but the number of people is huge. That actually helps them because they've got bigger reach. Whereas advertisers are sitting there saying, well, that YouTube, that person watching that video has already seen our ad because they're the sort of person that just hangs out at YouTube.
Hmm. Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. So they were saying that we've kind of... So Google's going through this period, and we've seen it before, where they were saying early on, content on the web started, you know, mushrooming, just becoming huge, and that's where Google made its fortune by creating a search engine that could filter throughout the noise and find the signal, right? Here's the best. Here's what you're looking for. They said, but the noise has kind of crept back in as websites have been trying to, you know, game the algorithms and optimizing themselves for search, right? And Google keeps fighting that kind of stuff. And around the same time, Facebook managed to build a better filter, like you were just talking about, with their social news feeds. And so search is being displaced by social discovery, you know? And so there, you know, it's this idea that we used to search for stuff and now we're using these social feeds via maybe Reddit or paper to help us decide, okay, here's what's interesting for you. Now, and Facebook was genuinely good at it. Now, the problem that you run into, though, is that, again, these websites aren't dumb. They optimize for that, and therefore we create clickbait, you know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't
you, BuzzFeed?
Yeah, because now it's no longer about getting the search engine to go, oh, yeah, that's a reputable source. It's about me going, ooh, interesting, click, because the way Facebook works, they go, oh, lots of clicks must be good.
What Disney prince am I most like?
For the record, BuzzFeed's YouTube videos are pretty darn good.
Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest. They're not terrible. They're worth a click.
They are. The one that got me was the "Are They Dating Yet?" Movie. It's a pretty funny short. And then I was like, all right, what else do you guys got here? And I may or may not have wasted an hour watching their stuff. But it's good. It's good.
Are they dating yet? YouTube, BuzzFeed. Okay. Just want to make sure I don't forget it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty funny. You know, just that classic. Yeah, it's good. I don't want to ruin it for you. But anyways, the point of all this being that we're quickly becoming wise to those clickbaity tricks, you know? And so, yet again, discovery fatigue is setting in. Yeah, and now what they're saying is that, you know, Facebook has grown, just like you were saying, but it's not... And it's going to continue, or I should say, and it's going to continue to grow, and it's huge, and, you know, it's not going anywhere anytime soon, just because all your friends are on there, so you're going to be on there. But those filters are not working. And as a matter of fact, they're probably getting weaker over time. And... So, you know, all this to say, like here, we'll say this. This is Marco Armet said this. He says, social networks have powerful benefits and they're here to stay. Yeah, that's what I just said. But like any trend, we've swung too far in a direction for our own good as both producers and consumers. And he's saying that pendulum in the sense of we're all spending time on social networks.
Right.
It's like, so he says, I hope the pendulum starts to swing back soon. Because, you know, back to that idea of, you know, searching out individual sites. He says, because if we want to get better, we need to start pushing back against that trend, modernizing blogs and building what we want to come next. And so it's this idea of saying, this, you know, everything were in, was individual blogs and websites, and Google did a great job of filtering those and pulling us together. And then social came along, and that was better for discovery because people weren't gaming it as much. And but we've all spent time now on social, and we all optimize for social. And right. So he's saying, we think it's time for something better. And this is where I come all the way back to say, Google is breaking up Hangouts, Photos, and Streams. I think they have an opportunity here to say, you know what, we're the kings of search. We don't have this legacy social thing. We think we can make content discovery better.
Yeah. See, I just want to remind them that they did have a legacy social thing that allowed content discovery to be great. I don't want them to live that down anytime soon.
That's true.
Because Feedly
the article
is still...
does reference the fact that they did have something like that called Reader, and their choice was to kill it instead of making it better.
And I feel like everybody who used used Reader figured out a Feedly-like solution, if not Feedly itself. That never won. I can't believe they did that. That was such a bad move.
Okay, don't get distracted by that.
Sorry.
The important part... the question is, do you think, and maybe you're answering it right here for me, you know, is could Google, you know, come back with another way to discover... or to help with content discovery?
Yes. And I think it comes down to contextual knowledge of people. I think that what they really want is that idea of, you know, the cool part about Facebook is that it allows you to know what everybody else is interested in. And Google, you know, search allowed you to say these, you have a particular thought, you have a particular piece of information you want to know more about. We'll give you everything related to that idea. So you tell it specifically what you think you want. And what Google has gotten wonderful at over the last couple of decades is figuring out what you said and turning that into what you actually want. And they use that with your Google search history and stuff like that. It's like the fact that I can ask a question about programming and I don't have to put the name of the programming language in anymore. It just knows based on what I've been doing lately, which language I'm looking for. You know, when I switch languages, sometimes you have to, the first couple times you have to put in JavaScript and then it'll, oh, okay, that's what you meant. But that sort of thing, it's very good at. Facebook, like you said, it's all about knowing what everybody else is interested in. So new information comes to you, and that's very similar to what Reddit is, but with a different community. I think Pinterest, too, they're asking the questions of what is everybody else interested in? And then so that you're in on the bigger conversation, where I think the next step is really to ask the question of what information do you need to know even before you need to know it? And that's a question that we can ask, that we can figure out better than any time in history, with the advent of phones and watches and glasses and all the rest of it sort of tracking you, and just very aware of what comes next. And that, I think, is, you know, that's all tied up in this machine learning type stuff and the advent of, you know, and the use of big data to really kind of map people out. I'd guess that comes next. It's tough. It's tough because I start my day out kind of by listening to a talk show, right, where a couple of hosts are, and the nice part about this talk show is it covers all sorts of different stuff from, you know, from comedy to politics to international politics, domestic politics to just sort of slice of life stuff and pop entertainment, and, you know, they kind of cover the gamut, but that's a very focused delivery of what we think is important, what you need to know. And it's uniquely different from the Facebook, what is everybody interested in? Because I tend to think that everybody has bad taste. I tend to think that individuals have good taste, but everybody has, you know, it's sort of like that old adage of nobody can be as, no one of us can be as dumb as all of us. I think that's, well, that's, you know, when you get a group together, man, like any one person is in charge of a project would be able to figure it out. But as soon as you get a bunch of people together, you know, in a meeting, all of a sudden it just comes off the rails. And I think kind of Facebook runs into that problem. So I would guess that, yeah, the next big one is where you open up your phone when you're standing in the brewery and it'll just tell you how much, where to buy the beer near you or something like, I don't know. It's hard to even think of what sort of information you didn't know you wanted. Because that's the hard part, right? That's the hard part about all of this is that the internet, one of the crazy parts about the internet is how dramatically it has shifted what we do. You know, and it's like the idea that, you know, we used to have these old bar arguments, as they were called, where you'd sit around and somebody would say something and everybody would argue, and that's not true. And you would have these long arguments. Well, nowadays you just Google it.
Right.
It's hard to we didn't even know that's what we wanted until we had it, and nowadays, man, it's tough because it's like it for that same reason. It's like I don't even know what it is I want to know before I'm sitting there trying to figure it out. You know, what is the next thing? And man, if Google has the answer to that question. I think they know. I think that's the reason why they're doing all the artificial intelligence, deep learning type stuff, is because they do think the answer is figuring out, having the answer for you before you even knew what the question was, and telling you what your question was. Like, what? Oh my gosh, it blows my mind. I think they think that's what comes next. And I think it'll be very useful if they can ever do it. I think they'll be right. I just don't know how you do it. And I don't think they know how you do it. And I think there's an intermediary. I think there's something that comes between where we are now and where we're going. And I, once again, I don't know where that is. Because I think we are, you know, everything I've been reading in the last week and a half as I've become an expert on artificial intelligences in their current state, it does seem like we're a lot further from a Star Trek-like computer than any of us want to admit. I do think it's in our lifetime, which is kind of absurd to think about, but you know, presuming that we live to the ripe old average age of human beings in America. But I don't think it's going to be earlier in our careers.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I don't know if I have a good answer either. Pinterest, though, thinks they might be onto something. They are now testing animated pins.
What is that?
They're really getting heavy into pins that animate.
What are they animating? The dead? So that would be a big deal. I would give them that. That would be huge.
No. So they've been working on a lot of like specialized pins. So not just pictures, but it might be one like an article. It'll actually have an article summary there. Or for a product pin, it'll actually tell you details about the product. And they're talking about getting it so that you can have a buy button right there and you can buy it right on Pinterest. Mm. And so the animated pin is... I can't even find it now, which is cool. They move when users scroll, okay, and I don't know a whole lot more than that. Like, you know, do they wiggle or do they stay in place? Are they like fixed frame or something? Not 100% sure. But I, the bigger picture is Pinterest is playing around a lot with advertising because it sounds like they think like, oh, we've got a new way of content discovery, and we want to start monetizing this bad boy and, you know, go to the pigs.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, dude, Etsy's going to IPO. Totally going to buy some of that stock when they do.
Nice. When?
I don't know. I can't remember. But when they do, I'll be in it.
Nice. That's a good. That's like a good one. I'll bet they make money.
Yeah. Well, they're not yet. That's why it's a perfect time to buy.
Yes.
They will. They will figure it out.
They're going well enough.
Yeah. Well, and Etsy's like figured out the whole data thing, which is pretty sweet. Actually, they've really pushed the bounds, which is kind of crazy on that. But again, all that to say, like, I don't know. I feel that there's out there. I know for me, I guess to answer my own question, I primarily use Feedly on my phone. I do like the Yahoo News Digest, just to be like, what's the world talking about?
That's funny, because I was actually going to give that as an example of what I think doesn't work.
Really?
Yeah. I've tried it. I still get the updates, and I just never use it. It's not enough. It's too bite-size, it doesn't – I feel like –
Well, you listen to the radio.
Yeah, so. I like, once again, I might be the wrong audience for that, because what I'm interested in, I take in a tremendous amount of information on. And so if they've got new information for me in that bite size of a setting, it's usually stuff where I'm like, come on, I knew about this. Like, it's either they have something new and because it's something I'm not interested in, or it's something I'm interested in which case it's so little, like, why would I care?
Fair enough. I'm highly insulated, so I don't care. Now, I use Dig for my, like, what's popular.
What is it that you're using?
Dig?
What's that?
It's owned by BetaWorks.
Interesting. I've never heard of it before.
Okay.
It's an interesting name.
Yeah, there's two G's. Just keep that in mind.
Two G's. So it's not DIG.com. It's DIGG.com. Man, that's clever. That's a good name. You'd think.
Yeah.
And I'll bet, is it one of those things where, like, if something's interesting and unique, you could dig it?
No. They don't have that feature anymore. At least I don't think so.
You know what that? You know what that reminds me of, James? Reminds me of Google Reader. Really good ideas tanked by really bad ideas.
I'm thinking, oh no, you can thumbs up them. You can
nice. You can like them.
What happens if I do that? Sign in to Dig. Okay, I guess I have to do that. I'm good.
You know what the worst thing that they did? You know what ruined that site more? I mean, there was a lot that they did that ruined that site. But seriously, the worst thing that they could have possibly done was they got rid of the bury button. And the worst part is I have since done some research, and it was the fact that they didn't actually change how the bury button worked. The algorithm, they didn't really change the back end of it. It was what they did with that information and what they presented to you was still changed. But like you, when you hid something or you like whatever the function was that they came up with, where you basically said, I don't want to read that, it worked as a bury. But because it never affected the score, people hated it. And Reddit does the same thing, where it's like when you downvote something and upvote something, it's not worth one upvote and one downvote. They've got this complicated algorithm that just sort of like it tracks likes and dislikes over time to sort of normalize everything into asking the question of what do people care about right now. But just the fact that it didn't give you the satisfaction of voting that something was bad, of giving it the thumbs down, as it were, it just ruined the site for people. And it was such a bad idea. And they were so stickly on, no, we're gonna stick with this. This is a good decision. Was it a good decision? Was it? It's so easy to mess these sites up, man, because the truth is, in all of this stuff, it's the community. I mean, Google does a pretty good job of, like, Google, see, and that's the thing. Google is insulated from the community. Because their whole strategy is we're going to look at just you and all the content out there and do our best to sort out what you want from the rest of the content. And that can lead them down some roads that need to work on optimization, because the whole, you know, highest point dilemma of, you know, sometimes you can become insulated from other information out there because you never click on it, so they don't even show it to you anymore. They don't give you the option. But those social media sites, man, they can come crashing down if you ruin the magic sauce that allowed people to. And I think that's Google's problem, is it's like they almost, you know, like when you ask this question of what comes next, I would never say that they could do social again, because I think they really burned the people that were their biggest core fans of their social stuff, which was Reader. You know, people were liking stuff, people were generating content, and it was a social media website in its nascent state, and they acknowledged that, which is why they took the team and moved them to Google Plus. I just don't know. I don't know what to make of any of it.
All right. So you think this opportunity is sitting out there and that they're not going to...
I don't think it's going to be Google. I think they're okay.
What are you doing to me, man? You're just like...
I am seriously... Can we talk about something fun, James? Can we talk about something...
You're really just
fun?
Like, you're hating all of my stories.
I'm sorry. Well, let's talk about something cool and exciting and it's the future.
Is it related to a watch?
That's exactly what I was going to say. How did you know?
So, okay, all right. So, well, I'll bite just a little bit here. Did you see Pebble's new Pebble Time Steel?
Yes.
The gold watch with a
red band. Oh, yeah, the one that looks exactly like Apple's watch. I mean, they even stole the staging for their promo pictures. I mean,
what are you doing, Pebble? What are you doing?
Yeah, last thing I'd want to do right now if I were Pebble would be to draw comparisons to the Apple Watch.
Which, hey, you know what? Worked out pretty well for Samsung and whatever their name is, Zombie.
Xiaomi. Yeah.
I mean, but wow. And who knows? They might have already had it in development for a while, and they're like, yeah, we were already kind of committed to this. I'm like, meh.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure it wasn't
maybe.
I think they took a look at what Apple had done and said, hey, that's a pretty good idea. We had a similar design to that. And, you know, I'm sure Apple helped solidify that decision as a good one. On one hand, it's like you can't blame them. On the other hand, it's like, what are you guys doing? Come on. Like, have a little dignity. Your product is cool, and it's cheap, and it lasts for 7 days. Like, it has strength in and of itself. Not enough strength to help you survive what's about to happen to you, but it has strengths. Be proud of your strengths.
No, I think they'll survive. I think they'll be fine. I mean, they're not obviously not going to sell millions and millions like Apple is going to. But, man, it's going to be, like, so frustrating. Like, oh, is that an Apple Watch? No.
No, this is way better because my low-resolution screen that doesn't look pretty at all will last for 7 days, which is cool.
And so, it only cost me $350 instead of 10 grand or 5 grand or 20 grand or whatever.
Which, ironically, is actually going to make you look like more of a dweeb, not less of a dweeb.
Yeah. Now, having said that, they released that this week. It was Mobile World Congress.
Yes.
And there was another company that released a watch, and I'm going to totally butcher their name, but it's the Huawei.
Huawei.
What is it?
Huawei. That's how I've always said it. I might be getting it wrong, but I believe it's Huawei.
So they launched the Huawei watch. So their whole thing was, like, we want it to look like as much as a traditional watch as possible. And they hired, I think it was, like, the Tag, it's Fossil, sorry. Those are probably totally different things. The Fossil designer dude who had done some work, obviously, beforehand. And so they were like, we wanted this to look just like a classic, awesome watch. And so they did that. It runs Android Wear, which, by the way, has actually had a significant number of downloads and installs or sales or however that's measured. Interesting fact, it's hard for them. Well, no, they actually can't. They don't know because they don't activate them. So Google's like, yeah, we don't actually know how many are out, how much is sitting out there. We have ideas in terms of how many people are connecting to it, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, because you don't activate it, so they don't know, which is kind of weird.
It's kind of weird.
But apparently, people love the way it looks.
It does look cool. It's got a round, it's like it looks like a dog dish. That's how
you're so bad.
That's how Mac Daily News all week long has been referring to it as the dog dish.
Dog dish? Yeah. That's so funny. Those guys, dude, they know how. Oh, what was I doing? I was reading this article. We'll go down the track. It was about the Apple Watch, and it was this company. Maybe that was the tag one, but they were just talking about how it's too complicated, and Apple needs to simplify it and get rid of the touch screen and do all this stuff. And Mac Daily News, they did their classic, like, write a paragraph and then comment on it.
Yes, yeah.
And then write a paragraph and comment on it. And it was, you know, the entire time just so cutting.
Yeah.
So
cutting. They were so current and sarcastic.
So well.
Yeah. They're good at tearing people apart when they want to.
They're loyal to a fault.
Oh, yeah. I love it. It's so bad. I looked it up. Howway, definitely the wrong way to say it. It's Huawei.
Huawei.
Yes, which is weird to a native English speaker, but that is the proper way to pronounce it. Huawei is totally wrong, and I should feel bad about myself. I do a little bit. I like the watch. I think it looks good. I like Android Wear. I mean, honestly, the biggest reason, I think part of the reason why I'm so excited about the Apple Watch is because of how much I liked my Moto 360. If it weren't for the fact that I didn't want the LG 3G and I wanted an iPhone, I would have kept it because I liked the 360 a lot. I thought it was a good device. I liked Android Wear. I thought it was a good-looking device. And Huawei has come up with a very good-looking device. It's bright. It's, you know, it looks cool. It's got a lot of different faces. It doesn't have, like, the weird squared-off part of the round face that the 360 has. It's one of those things where I think in a vacuum, or even within the Android market, it's a good looking device. And has got some serious legs under it. It's not, I mean, I think Samsung's watches to this point have looked so ugly. This one doesn't. And I think they got a little bit carried away in their criticisms of the Apple Watch. I think they basically came out the gate saying that the Apple Watch looks clunky and ugly, and
they said it looks okay. They gave it they were very mean to Samsung, but they said Apple Watch design is good. It's okay, but I think their smartwatch design is not a traditional classical one. Our design is differentiated from them. Many people love this style. People have a loyalty to the tradition.
That's true with the rounded watch face. I mean, a square watch face is not traditional. It's also not unheard of. It's just...
Well, so what's funny about this, that the author, who maybe we'll give him credit, Sam Byford, we can't say names. His very next sentence says, I'm unconvinced by, what is it, Huawei's assumption that people want watches to remain a certain way forever. Watches are technology with a singular purpose. They are also jewelry. When I conducted my interviews with Yui and Norton, I was wearing a square Braun digital watch that does its job of telling time, being comfortable, and looking the way I want it to look. So, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I actually think that it's going to be really interesting to watch how the style of the wristwatch over the next couple of years, because it is such a prominent part of design and fashion. Like, and I don't know. I
want to see him move closer to the power glove, where it's more like, yeah, it's the width of your wrist, but then, you know, or the height, I guess. I can't think about how to say this, like the height of your wrist, but then it starts to like creep up your arm.
Yeah.
So it goes all the way. Actually have a lot more.
It's like a full on.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if they can figure out the whole flex display. Oh man. Love it. You'll get extra battery life. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah. And it'll just look stupid. That goes back to my belief that the smartphone is the worst possible size. It's too big to be mobile. It's too small to be useful. I feel like that's part of the advantage of the wristwatch is that it's the wrist screen. Is it small enough to be mobile? I don't know. It's going to be really interesting over the next couple of years, as I feel like all of these designs, like all of them, we're going to look back and think, wow.
How quick.
Wow, that was ugly. But I think it's going to be just feverish for the next 2 years that smartwatches are going to look like Apple Watches. And I think they are going to take the fashion world by storm, not because they're classic or they've got a design that's gonna last that's gonna look good in 10 years. I think they're gonna take the fashion world by storm because rich people are stupid, and we all try to like there is it's okay so I didn't list this as
yeah, my just kind of threw that one out there.
I know I didn't list this as my main story, and because it's actually too big of a topic to talk about as your main story. But this video that I watched called The Four Horsemen of Tech. It's the DLD-15, the Four Horsemen, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. Who wins and loses? Scott Galloway is the guy giving the talk. He talks at 1,000 miles a minute. It's a 15-minute long video, and it is worth watching because he talks about Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google and their futures. He works for this company that does like this. They do all this analysis of different companies over time, trying to figure out where they're going, what's going on. Where you and I use our gut a lot,
it's a 90
this guy
slides,
uses so cold hard data. And he has some really really fascinating insights, and one of them is about the fashion world and especially high-end luxury, and how at the high-end luxury it is so much a competition amongst people of people knowing how much you spent and whatever, like your brand has to be well known and everybody is competing for that brand. So what ends up happening is there's sort of a homogenization of luxury goods. They all look the same. They all have the same brand. They all kind of lead together because it's a small group of people that are all competing for the same recognition. And as a result, that style sort of trickles down as it filters its way to the lower end models and stuff. But we're kind of dumb in that we're herd animals and we all go together for reasons that totally makes sense. But I think what you'll see is because this is your first really luxury smartwatch, for lack of a better category, all the rich people are going to have to, if they're going to get a smartwatch, they're going to get the Apple Watch, which means everybody, all the rich people will have watches that look the same. And then you'll start to see that trickle into cheaper designs that are designed specifically to look like Apple Watch knockoffs.
Pebble.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and even in not just the color palette, but also the overall design and hardware and
yeah.
You know, and I this is one of the best videos I've seen in a long time, by the way. I mean,
I'll have to watch it.
Oh dude, it tripped me out. Can I talk about it right now?
Yeah.
Is there any reason for me to not change?
I feel like you've been doing it.
Okay, good. So yeah, one of the things that this guy talks about, so he basically, he believes that Apple will be the first $1 trillion company because they're moving into the luxury brand, and just the nature of how luxury brands move and shift over time. If you couple their reach, their influence, their their technology, everything that Apple does, if you couple that with the nature of how luxury brands operate, it's very promising for them over the next 10 years. He believes...
You think it'll take 10 years?
Well, I mean, just in general. He didn't say it'll take 10 years. Just their future is bright from what they're doing.
Dude, if it doesn't happen this year, next year, it's not going to happen.
Okay. Amazon, he thinks Amazon is on the cusp of failure.
What?
Yeah, because of a big tear. Not necessarily failure. That's unfair. He actually specifically says when he talks about winners and losers, he's really talking about who's winning less versus who's winning more.
Okay.
Not actual losers. But he does point out the huge problem for Amazon, and that's their ballooning shipping costs. They went from they had a 40% increase in shipping costs last year from just over $3 billion to over $6 billion. And like, you know, it's huge, the rate of their shipping cost, and they're not making it up in volume. They're not making it up in Amazon Prime deals and whatnot. And what he said is that they really, what they're fighting is, what makes it worse is that they're fighting different models where brick and mortars like Macy's and Best Buy. Best Buy is a perfect example where they use their storefronts, their showrooms as flexible warehouses and allows them to dramatically decreased the cost of shipping in a very competitive way. And so they're able to offer free shipping for that TV. And he argues that it actually costs less to get a TV from Best Buy than from Amazon nowadays because of that, because they have the TV closer to you than Amazon does.
Huh.
And he actually points at the fact that Macy's, their online presence and is growing at a rate that is far outstripping Amazon. And so as Macy's grows what their inventories have at their different locations, they're actually going to be able to surpass Amazon for that specific reason, where they can use their massive network as flexible warehouses. So Amazon's got a real problem, and they have to buy a local brick and mortar retailer with tons of locations and start really leveraging that, or they're going to get passed by these brick and mortars that can do it for cheaper. They can't just go the classic monopoly route of undercut everybody, lose money until you win. They're not going to win that way, unfortunately for them. Facebook, he says Facebook is winning, dude. And he's like, you read all these stories about how teens don't like Facebook and they're not, and kids are moving away from Facebook. And he's like, it's just not true. Like, there's just not really, when you look at all the data together, it's just not credible. Even if you ease Instagram out of the data, if you put Instagram into it and remember that Instagram is owned by Facebook, it is astounding. There is only one player in mobile, and it's Facebook. And he was like, it's crazy, especially in this. And their big thing is because of the whole passport thing and their really long extended reach, they get way more information about what you're doing online than Facebook is. So their reach and penetration for their advertising revenue has way more headroom than Google does.
Wait, who?
Facebook.
Tell me more about this passport thing. I probably know what this is.
That's where you can log into different websites and whatever.
Right.
That was what they called it back in the day when they were first pioneering.
That's right, I remember that.
And the Facebook Universal Login. Google, I can't remember what his position on Google was. Man, it's a long talk. Google, I think it was one of those things where man, I don't want to misrepresent it because I'll sound like an idiot when everybody sits down and watches the video. But
which I'm going to do tonight, by the way.
Yeah, but it was really compelling. I thought it was really compelling, just his whole position on what does all this look like and why he talked about it. I mean, he brought up stuff that I thought was really useful. And I do remember Google didn't look as hot as Facebook and Apple. Facebook and Apple – bright futures. Google, a little bit worrisome. And I think it was in direct comparison to Facebook that it becomes a little bit worrisome. Once again, he said it's who wins most versus who wins least.
Right.
Amazon, he seemed to think had the worst fate going forward. By definitely, they.
Well, it sounds like they have a large structural problem that they have to
fix,
like operational problem that they have to figure out.
And they will, and they can. It's just they have to in order to continue doing what they're doing. So. Anyway, so do you ever feel like this life is too much, right? You ever feel like this life is too much to take and you just want to give up and go into a dream world where anything is possible and you can just exist there forever?
I think you just described my average day.
Nice. Well, guess what, James? That future is coming.
Oh, yes.
So, Mobile World Conference, no.
Congress,
that knock. This week.
And yours makes more sense, but yeah.
Yes, thank you. But it was, they had some cool announcements, and so number one, Sony made my day. I was very excited about this. I bet on this horse, and so far they haven't disappointed. Launch date, a little bit makes me worried, but it's okay. Project Morpheus, their 3D headset. They're planning on launching it early 2016. So next year, full year away, kind of drives me nuts. I'm very excited. I can't wait. But the good news is they also announced a whole suite of cool upgrades that are coming to it. Number one, it's got a 5-inch LCD that has been bumped up to – the 5-inch has been up to 5.7-inch screen OLED display with a resolution of 1920 by 1080, which means it's a really high resolution screen. It now has a 100-degree field of view above the original 90. 100 degrees is kind of viewed as the absolute minimum to give you the full field of view. Basically, what they've done is they've managed to jump up the screen specs. Oh, they brought up to 120 hertz reframe up from 60.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. Their whole strategy here is they've brought it up to what is viewed as the minimum for presence. It's not as good as what will be out there at the same time, but A, it will be affordable, which is a huge advantage, and B, I'm going to put affordable in finger quotes for now. I am going to afford it. That does not mean it will be affordable. but it'll be affordable compared to other solutions out there for sure. But it also brings it up to the minimum sort of bar of what people really think it is required. Because one of the big things of having the better refresh rate and everything is they brought the latency down beneath 18 milliseconds, which Oculus actually argues that 14 is the minimum, but 18's pretty dang good, especially if all you're doing is, you know, playing Destiny, which is going to be awesome. I can't wait. They've also added 3 more LED trackers so they get better head position, and so that's the big thing. They've just announced Sony's and they've also said this is pretty much what it's going to be look like. We're gonna make some changes, and they're giving themselves a little bit of leg room to a little bit of wiggle room over the next year to solidify the details so that if things change in the industry, they can change with it. But
yeah,
it's one of those things where at this point I can kind of like, I was excited about it, but I was a little bit like, you know, it's not as good. Now I think they've actually, it sounds like they have crossed the threshold of what is necessary to really sell the technology, I think, which is very exciting. I'm glad that Sony's hitting it hard, and I will definitely be rewarding them with one of my paychecks when it comes out. That being said,
I like your alternate title. Matthew will be buying Sony's Project Morpheus early 2016.
Yes. I have a feeling
they make it look cool. Sony's always been good at that.
Yeah, it definitely is the hippest looking of all the devices. Easy. That being said, other players in the field have not stood still. So HTC has come out with announced what they call the Vive. And it is pretty awesome sounding. They have teamed up with Valve to launch this headset. It is on par. It's unfair to HTC to say it is on par with the Oculus. It's better than the Oculus. Really? Yeah. Just from a pure hardware perspective, they've actually got two different screens in it. It's not a single screen with split eye pieces. They get a much better field of view than everybody else. It's got HDMI, a couple of USB plugs. It's got a bunch of sensors on it. It's super high resolution. This thing is like, it is, we talked back in the day, when the one guy jumped the, what's his name? I'm not going to remember it, and I'll probably pronounce it wrong if I remembered it anyways, the rate we're going today. But he's the guy who, Cormac, he joined Oculus from Valve, and Valve at the time, the rumor was Valve had a headgear thing, but they weren't looking into it. They were saying, yeah, we've tried, we've looked into it, but we can't make it work. Well, he jumped ship to Oculus. Oculus kept pushing forward. Valve, it sounds like, didn't really slow down, but they had other stuff they were looking for. HTC built this piece of hardware, but it uses what Valve has announced, which is called the Lighthouse, for actually tracking your movement. They haven't really gotten super specific about how it works, but what they've said is the people who have used it, number one, you need a 15 by 15 room, like clearance, to be able to do all the different tracking, but it's crazy accurate. Like it just, it's very, very, very compelling when it gets in there, when you get in there, and with the super high resolution screen and everything, it gets weird, is what everybody's saying, where it's just like, when they talk about you feel like you're there, you feel like you're there. It is very, very immersive. People who get really motion sick from earlier versions of the Oculus have been able to use this HTC device for long periods of time without getting motion sickness. Wow. They're talking about how this is like the first one that even the cynics are going, yeah, this is a big deal. This really moves into a new realm of experience, which is exciting because there's no reason to think that it stops here getting better, which, yeah, it's exciting. I don't even know how else to say it. But what's great about it is you're going to see, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see three different real, it sounds like you're going to see three horses in this race, three big horses. You're going to see the HTC Vive solution that's really going to leverage the technology that Valve is working on. And I actually think they're going to be the worst of all because they're going to be the most expensive, but they're going to be the most advanced. You're going to see the Oculus really kind of kick it in there, and I think they are going to team up with the Android VR. I think when Google finally launches that software, Oculus and Facebook are going to join up and say, yeah, that's a good solution. We'll use that. And the reason I think that is just because of watching the partnership between Oculus and Samsung and sort of where that's all going, I get the feeling that they're all working together. They all think this is a good solution. They want to come up with something. And then you're going to see Sony do their thing as well as sort of the third horse in this race. And I think Sony's going to just crush everybody from numbers simply because every solution out there requires more hardware to get the performance that you want. I think Sony's the only one that's going to be able to get the performance that everybody's looking for, but with a solution that already has, people like me have already bought most of the things that you need in order to get it. It will be a nominal cost increase above the existing infrastructure, and that's going to have a huge advantage to them. But what's cool about it is you'll be able to do a lot of those video experiences that they've been talking about, where all the cool VR movie storytelling stuff, that will work on Sony's Project Morpheus. It'll have the effect that everybody wants. It just won't be as high a quality. But the good news there is that the whole industry isn't going to be, they're not going to be tanked because the leader's technology is not quite good enough. They did talk about demos. One of the interesting things that Sony talked about with demos that they were building, they were like, yeah, we had this one demo where we had something that jumped out at people. and surprise them. And they said, we had to stop using it because people kept, like, jerking away and breaking stuff and, like, running into walls. Like, it just, yeah. Like, that is, oh my gosh. They're like, yeah, it's actually something that we have to, like, deal with when making video games, because people are going to want to make video games that really take advantage of this. And it freaks people out if you go too aggressive on it. And, which I think is awesome.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
I know. That's so great. The other thing about Valve's Lighthouse, this is the other thing that I wanted to mention, is that Valve's Lighthouse technology is really it's a holistic solution for motion tracking. And that's the reason why they actually separate it out when they talk about HTC's headgear, is because Valve really looks at it as something bigger that will work with TVs and monitors and all sorts of stuff. It's more in the lines of the Kinect, but better. Better precision, more pieces of information that it's tracking. That's how they're pitching it. I think I want to see more of it before I render my opinion, but it actually is a separate piece of technology, but it's a necessary piece of technology for the full immersion experience. It's cool.
Man, that sounds really cool. I want to try it.
I know. I can't wait.
I feel like I shouldn't, because then I will instantly have to start saving for it.
Yep.
But, man,
it's gonna be awesome. Sure looks cool.
Sure looks cool.
Yeah.
This time next year.
Yep.
The first of many. I like it.
I'll be getting my second Apple Watch.
Oh, man.
At least I can be honest about it, right?
Oh. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's pretty funny, though.
Yeah. So, am I up next again?
I think so.
So they just never, these guys don't stop, man. They just keep it coming with the cool technology. This is sort of like a, I don't want to call it inside baseball, but it's not very consumer facing yet. A couple big announcements were made, though, with your big companies that do graphics engines. Do you know what a graphics engine is?
It's the part of the program that defines the world in which your character lives and the rules and has different textures about it and stuff.
That's very eloquent.
I don't know.
The graphics engine is essentially when you make a video game, you want to create this world. Like, let's say Mario, right? They're the level designers that go in and actually design the characters and the levels and everything. They use a suite of tools that allow them to build those levels. And it's usually artists that go in and game designers. And it's they're technically inclined. They're usually no code. But they're not the guys that are figuring out how you're going to render textures onto what are those called, polygons in space, and how that's going to be rendered and how that works. That's usually one team that's doing the lighting effects and all of that and building these really complex tools that you can think of as a bunch of they're a bunch of tools that you can use to build a level. And then they hand all these tools to the level designers, and the level designers then go in, and when you put all that together, what you're left with is a, you know, Super Mario 64 level.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I said.
Pretty much. But it's the exactly. And now Mario, the Mario 64 graphics engine was very specific for Mario when they built it. But when you build these tools, it's possible to build these very generalized tools that even that other companies, other games can leverage and use. And there are really three different major competitors out there for these tools. One was the Unity engine, which has become very popular in recent years because it's free. There is the Unreal engine, which has long stood as kind of your best performance for your best graphics and stuff and best tools. And I'm sure there's a bunch of computer game designers out there that are screaming at their podcast device right now saying, you're such an idiot, you don't know that. But that's what I've been told, okay? I read it on the internet. And then there's also the Source Engine, which is what Valve uses to build a lot of their games. They're now onto Source 2. Epic is onto Unreal 4. And what's been going on, though, is that they have seen the Unreal Engine for the longest time. You had to pay a bunch of money in order to get those tools, and then once you built the game, you then had to build them to use it. There was a continuing, you know, profit sharing. Source from Valve was a similar thing. Unity was totally free, open source. It was awesome. And although it was not nearly as powerful because it was free and open source, a lot of people were using it just because it was there and available, and you didn't have to be a big studio to be able to make high-powered graphics. Unity has made some huge strides in performance, where it's starting to tickle the backside of Unreal and Source, they're stealing a lot of business from those two. And so Unreal made a big announcement. This is super cool. It is now free to get. But they do require profit sharing. It's like 5% after the first $5,000 worth of games that you sell. Valve has announced it's going to be free to get their tools. They haven't announced if there's going to be anything that comes after that, which presumably there will be. It's kind of a big deal for that industry that a lot of these really big graphics tools are going open source and free. And Unreal is also, they've got this Epic, the guys that make Unreal, they've got this kind of exciting platform that they've got coming down, which they call the UE4 Marketplace. And they're talking about the idea that, like, there are certain things that everybody uses in a game. It's like office chairs. There are so many versions of, like, standard office chairs out there that everybody has to build their own model. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So they're building these marketplaces where you can now buy and share different models from company to company. So when you're making your game where people are going to go and shoot up the place because there are a bunch of military guys killing terrorists, you can all be shooting up the same chairs.
Right.
And it just along the same lines of they build these tools that make it easy to build that sort of a thing. Well, now they're going to make tools that make it easy to – you don't even have to build it. And you just place it into your existing model. I will say some of the Unreal 4 videos that are out there where they show off the photorealism of the engine are freaky. They are straight up unbelievable, man. How good they are. Their lighting effects and stuff are getting they're getting unreal appropriately, I think. When we combined in the next like 4 years your virtual reality headgear with your Lighthouse spatial tracking and the Unreal photorealistic engines that are rendering everything in real time, it's going to be strange. Like, there are going to be consequences to it. People are going to snap.
And you need directional treadmills.
Yeah. It is interesting how they deal with, I guess one of the things that they deal with in when they're talking about with the HTC Vive and Lighthouse is that you'd be walking around and there would be these, like, you'd take a step and all of a sudden in the game world, there just appear this like wall of light. And they'd be like, whoa, where'd that come from? Why is there a wall of light there? And somebody would have to be like, because there's actually a wall in front of you. you've left the confines of what you can do, and they're preventing you from going too far.
They're protecting you.
The unidirectional, it's an interesting question. That's still a weird one that I don't, that time will tell if we. I'm not convinced we need to figure that one out right away.
I am.
Okay.
Why not?
Well, just because I think what we'll do is we'll figure out how to tell stories in video games within the context of moving around a 15-foot square. Gross traveling will be taken care of some other way. It's going to be, because it's funny, I sit there and I expect the best, the most successful games, PlayStation games, aren't going to be the ones that require you to hold both wands and like fight with lightsabers and pretend like you're shooting a gun. I personally think the most successful games are going to be the ones that are, it's just Destiny. But you, the only difference is when you look around, it uses your head to track where you're looking. And you still use your thumb for gross movement and aiming and everything, but it's just looking around the screen. It's going to be – so you very much – so what it ends up being is instead of me playing on my small little – you know, my small – I can't believe I'm calling my 28-inch monitor a small little screen. But you know, instead of me playing on this small little window into the universe, the window is going to be all around me. And it will feel like it, but I'm still playing it as a traditional game. I think that is actually going to be the most popular types of VR games for the next couple of years.
That's fair. That's probably very fair. I know for me, it's like, oh, dude, it'd be fun just watching a movie.
Yo, yeah, exactly. I'd love to see how they train.
I don't even have to move. You know, I'm okay if it doesn't react to my head movements. I just want the big screen.
They have those. You can buy headsets that do 3D stereo optics but they're like, yeah, exactly. I was like, why would I pay that much money for something that doesn't even do a head tracking? You're joking, right? Like, yeah, I mean,
and the resolution isn't that great.
Yeah, but seriously though, like, I am looking forward to watching movies. Like, I'm glad I got Netflix on my PlayStation 4. I'm going to be able to, dude, it's going to be super intense watching Breaking Bad on my, I don't even know what I watch. But yeah, you're right. Especially How to Train Your Dragon, I think would be a great experience.
Just don't watch a scary movie with things that jump out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I have a feeling that's not going to be as bad. Because it won't do head tracking with you, you won't feel like you're in the movie. You'll still very much feel like you're watching the movie. I think
you'll still jump.
Oh yeah, you're right.
You just may not break things in an attempt to get out of the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man,
that's awesome.
Yeah, no, it'll be cool. Knowing me, I'll get something.
Yeah,
I'll be like, you know, I don't have a TV. I just VR.
Yeah, it's not a TV. Well, you know, I really like the idea. I've shared, since you brought it to our attention, I've shared this with quite a number of people, the idea that VR is really the last form of media. Because anything new you could come up with can fit within VR. It's something that you can virtualize. Movie theaters can be virtualized now. Books can be virtualized. So everything else... We might. Well,
that's kind of a weird thought. I've never really thought about that.
You're the one who brought it to our attention.
The book reading one was the one that. I guess that's true.
Yeah. Huh, that's weird. Yeah. Why would I do that? But at the same time, if I want the book reading experience, think about this. I wanna go to the Beast's castle. And sit in the the West Wing, which I don't remember which wing it was, and go into his huge cool library and pick out books off his library shelf and just like flip through the book and all I have is like a blank notepad in front of me as I'm flipping through and it's virtualizing all the words onto it. Why not? You can read anywhere you want to. You can have fire crackling in the background in the middle of a crowded library.
That's kind of cool. I do like the idea, too, of... Ah, man. Just in content selection alone would be an experience.
Yeah.
You know, where I... You know, we'll stick with the books for a little bit. You can go to, like, a bookshelf, which is, like, your Kindle bookshelf or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, and peruse. You know, and they've got their recommended ones. Oh, we think you'd like this. And you can literally pull it off the bookshelf and try it. I think, like, with movies... You can literally have like movie posters that you are walking by or scrolling through and that may or may not be animated. And then you choose one and like you literally go inside the movie theater and watch it.
And
it's while you're going inside the movie theater, it's loading essentially.
Exactly. And imagine this, you're working in Hong Kong and your 4-year-old wants you to read him a book to go to sleep. So he slips on a VR headset, you slip on a VR headset, and all of a sudden you're in a library together with your own private room reading a book together, and you're showing him the book pages and flipping through it, and like, and you're in this virtual room together going through this experience with old media, you know, ironically enough. It's not like it's, you know, it's obviously not, you know, it's virtualizing an experience that you could otherwise do. I mean, like it has big, I mean, it means something. Like there's something happening, and it's just a, you know, so even when you think about, like, even when it becomes difficult to think about what would be the next form of media after this, where that becomes difficult to come up with, this is easy. And you know, and dude, seriously, the Unity videos, like, I highly recommend you check out one. I'll look up one for you that we can post, because they're...
Well, I'm thinking, like, hands-on learning stuff can obviously become huge all of a sudden, especially if they can figure out how to augment it. You know, if, like... I don't know, my initial thought was, like, cooking. You could learn how to cook, and, like, you actually have to do it. You know, and or automotive could be another very interesting one where they're teaching you how to do this stuff in a virtual environment. That's pretty cool.
Okay, James. Yeah. Before we move on, I'm gonna post this to. Let me just drop this into our show notes so you can click on it and then react in real time.
Okay.
This is the Unreal Engine. It is a tour of a Paris hotel or apartment.
Is there any audio to it? Should I?
I don't think so. I don't.
All right. Let's see here. Here we go.
You might want to just kind of fast forward for the first couple of minutes. Fast forward to like 20 seconds.
Well, I'm already at 10.
Okay, well then just hold on.
Okay, all right. I'm in a hallway, looking down, looking up, progressing through this hallway. This is all virtual?
Yep.
Wow, that looks very real.
Right?
That's pretty scary.
Yep.
I'm looking at a bed that looks like a real bed.
Now imagine you had headgear on that allowed you to just stand in the middle of this room.
Dude, I'd turn on that lamp right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'd grab that mail and be like, what's that stack of paper there? Books? That bed looks pretty comfy, actually.
Right? I know.
It's a little weird that it's just bright white outside, but...
They're showing off the lighting is one of the big things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, I see the shadows. Holy cow.
Yep. Yeah. This is definitely, if you're listening to this show, this is super compelling radio right now.
They can hear the music.
I know. But it's worth actually clicking on this link, because it changes. When you see this and you start to think about being in a 3D world with, like, in that reacting, I mean, it is, that sense of presence is going to be off-putting. Because even when, and it's funny, looking at this, there are little details that make it obvious that this is not a real room, but it's enough to be very, very immersive.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a little clean, but yeah.
Exactly.
Now, here, let me see.
Take it in.
All right, there. So for those of you who are watching on YouTube, you can see what I'm seeing a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it's got the wood grain that looks real. It's got this reflection going off the back counter.
Yeah, that one I thought looked cool.
Yeah, it's all those reflections and shadows that makes a huge difference.
Huge.
That's impressive, man.
It definitely makes me want.
This is Unreal.
Yeah, this is
that they just made free.
Yes, this is the Unreal 4 engine. This definitely, I don't know why, man, but this makes me want to pick up a gun and shoot aliens. Like, this gets me excited. Like, I could imagine. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Half-Life. Ironically, completely different. The Valve Studio. It reminds me of Half-Life 2. just sort of as from an environmental perspective, running through these sorts of areas and yeah.
Wow, that's pretty incredible, man.
So, anyways, that's the state of that was for whatever reason, man. That it took over the Mobile World Congress this year. All of this cool stuff. But it is 10:04, dude. When did we get started?
8:10. You got one more you want to do? Quickly.
Yeah. I'm trying to decide which.
I feel like you got one more, don't you?
I've got like four more, so I'm gonna pick one that's
four more.
So I'm gonna say I will narrow it down to the. So Tinder costs twice as much if you're over 30. Valve announced all of those like little smart.
You find that reality is remarkably stressful.
Yes,
because you're approaching.
Because I'm approaching 30. Yes,
that's funny.
And I it makes me feel better about having a girlfriend right now, but it still stresses me out because it's like, oh, I'm getting old, jerks. I think it'd just be too controversial for them to make it to get a tier plan and a sex tier plan, because I'm about to sound super sexist, but. I gotta believe they don't mind 35-year-old dudes using it as much as they mind 35-year-old women using it.
Wait, what?
Just statistics.
I'm gonna let that go.
I'm gonna say thank you because hopefully nobody was listening. don't make me really regret that. It's gonna be bad enough if anybody I know is paying attention. It's just okay. You know what?
You're good.
Thank
you're
you.
Good.
So Google is going to launch a new
Apple Watch.
Exactly. Google has confirmed they're launching a new wireless service. It's going to be a virtual network in the same vein that like Republic Wireless is doing.
Oh man, that'd be so cool.
Yeah, and basically they didn't have a lot of details on what it would be like. There is a big rumor it will only work with Nexus 6 phones. Is how they're going to limit. Who jumps on it? It'll be tied to specific pieces of hardware.
Interesting.
The idea being that this actually isn't something for them to like beat them up on price. Where Google Fiber is definitely about showing telecoms that it can be done better for cheaper. That's not the point of this. It actually seems more like the point of this is they really want to figure out how to leverage. Cellular towers and Wi-Fi and stitch together a much more powerful and robust wireless network and really take advantage of all of that stuff. So they're going to be working with telecoms that have a strong base of wireless routers out there that they can access and cell towers in order to kind of – it actually sounds like they think they know how to build the technology better, and so they want to it's more of a way for them to try out new technologies that hopefully will be widely adopted by the telecoms after Google proves their efficacy, is the note that I wrote for myself. So it's worth watching. It's going to be cool because I think it'll have wider impact, although very, very few people will ever actually get to use it. That's kind of what I was – the whole point of what I wanted to bring to you. At that point, if you've got another story, you're allowed one more. You're only allowing me one more. But –
I don't think I have one.
Oh, you don't?
Dude, yeah. I got mine all in at the top of the show.
That's cool.
I was on it.
The show is structured differently than it normally is, but that's okay. It's a weird week, man.
From our standpoint, that's, not from everyone
nobody else.
Else
nobody else has any idea what went wrong.
We didn't follow our color pattern at all.
Yeah, you guys. But, this you know, is we say
story after story.
This is the wild west of shows this week. Okay, guys, like it was crazy. But
all my stories were on Monday and I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot, what's going to happen the rest of this week? And then nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, cool.
Yeah. That helped. Yeah. I didn't even have a story from Friday. It's nuts. Really and truly, there's only one story this week. And that was the Apple Watch is going to be coming out tomorrow. And
if you're listening to this tomorrow, which you will be because that's when we post the podcast, it's already come out.
Yes. So celebrate. I hope you've already got yours. Let me know that you have it. I'm going to be so – I can already – you know what's going to – I'm going to be heartbroken because they're going to tell me I'm going to have to wait another month. I have to start emotionally preparing myself for that right now, that tomorrow isn't Christmas Day. Because there's a little part of me, I actually let myself start to believe, like, I think it was Friday, I had this thought, I was like, what if they pull a classic Apple, they just go crazy, and they say, guess what, guys, you can buy it today, and it's just like, and like, everybody goes nuts. And then I was like, no, don't do that. Why would you do that to yourself? Why would you get let yourself get excited about that? That doesn't even make sense.
Would you be happy if they were just like, you could go to the store and try it out today?
Would I be happy? Probably.
Or satisfied, you know what I mean?
I think if I can buy it in the next 2 weeks, I'll be okay with that. I would be very excited if you could actually try it out tomorrow. I don't think so.
That's what I meant.
My guess is pre-orders start on Friday. It'll actually be in stores on Friday, and then they'll ship a week later. Okay. I think you'll be able to play with it before you can actually buy it. And I think it's a two-week horizon. But I can tell you, James, if you can buy them this week, I will have one by Sunday.
Okay.
Even if I have to buy the gold one, just so that I can make sure I have one.
How much, what's your max? Like, how much would you pay for a gold watch?
How much would I pay for?
This is kind of fun since we don't actually know the answer yet.
Oh, geez.
Would you pay 10 grand?
Would I pay? No.
If they came out and, like, gold watch is 10 grand.
No. You see, my problem is I'm not willing to pay. This is going to sound nuts, but I've been thinking about asking the question of what is my price point for the stainless steel. 1,000 is too much, which I think is what they're going to go with. But 500 is unquestionable. I'd get the stainless steel one. 800, I'd have to think. I'd have to think long and hard about that. Because I can afford it. That's the problem, is I can afford it. I've got the money set aside, but it's just $800 for a watch. That's the $350 one that all you're paying for is style at that point. You are not paying for anything else, and that would be hard for me to take. I have decided I'm going to get two wristbands, though. I'm going to get a black sport band that I'll probably wear most of the time, and then a nicer band for wearing with suits and stuff. The actual body of the body, it 800 is a 850. I'm pretty sure I'll say no. 750. I'm pretty sure I'll say yes. 799 is basically 800. So no.
Okay, cool. I'm going to enjoy my Pebble watch.
I'll bet, and I'm still betting. So for the gold watch, the lowest of the gold watches, the cheapest of the gold watches, do we want to take a final bet?
So in their latest patent, maybe not their latest anymore, in one of their recent patent filings, you know, they talked about the fact that they figured out how to make the gold stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Which inherently means less gold.
Yep.
In this thing. I know that a luxury watch can be tens of thousands of dollars, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's not unreasonable for them to charge $10,000 for a luxury watch. And I guarantee you, in their presentation, they will mention that.
Yes.
Because that's what they do. They like to anchor their prices. I would not be, as far as we know, there's not like memory sizes to this thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you get the big one or the little one.
Yeah.
Right. And it has as much memory as it's going to have in it. And right. I mean,
we don't know. We don't know yet, but that's been the assumption.
And then and it's all about the wrist straps, and mm-hmm. and I've kind of getting the sense that they haven't unveiled all of those yet either.
Yeah.
At least they've unveiled all the Apple ones, but there's going to be some interesting third party ones.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, an iPhone case from Apple, which is like really thin leather.
Yeah.
Or that plastic, which is obviously where they make up on their margins, right? How much were those? $60
$60
For the leather one?
Mm-hmm.
So you know these straps, which have metal in them, though arguably less leather, they're going to be at least $60.
Oh.
Probably.
The rubber
one. Probably like $120.
Oh, I'll bet you won't be able to get a metal one for less than $150. Honestly.
$150, okay. I was thinking $120, but yeah, $150. So I guess where I'm headed with all this, the watch straps are going to be paramount to your cost.
Yes.
Right? It's going to add a ton to them. I guess what I want to say is I would not be shocked if Apple came out and said, you know what, we actually want to sell a lot of these, like they did with the iPhone,
mm-hmm.
though they are going the luxury route, which, you know, could throw this all off, and say, yeah, gold watch, $2,500.
Well, so I think what they'll do is they'll say the Sport, the aluminum body one, will come with a plastic, with the Sport strap. That'll be $350 for the small one, and it'll be $400 for the larger one. That's what's going to kill me with the stainless steel, too, by the way. It's going to be $775 for the small one, and it's going to be $825 for the big one. I'm going to be like, no! you
can't do that. I think they'll have that big of a jump just for the body type?
Stainless steel? Oh, heck yeah. Because I think the cheapest gold one's going to be I think the cheapest gold one's going to be 20, is going to be $5,000. Yeah, I think what they're going to do is that...
See, dude, I'm so cheap, I can't price these things.
Yeah, see, I think what's...
I should work for Google.
Right? I think what they're going to do is they're going to say there's going to be the gold and the rose gold. I think they're going to differentiate the prices there. They're going to differentiate the prices on the straps, and they're going to differentiate the prices on the physical sizes. And I think what you'll find is the male rose gold with the rose gold wrap or whatever, whichever one they think they're going to sell to businessmen. I'm not sure if that's the standard gold or the rose gold, but that one is going to be the most expensive, and I could easily see it be above $10,000. We talked about the price of gold. If it's got 2 ounces of gold in it, it's got almost $4,000 worth of gold in it. I mean, it's ridiculous how, you know, they're going to be able to pull prices on it just from the cost of hardware and from the raw material cost. And then they're trying to position it as a premium good. I don't think they want to sell very many of the gold watches at all. I think they want those to be super rare. And I think they want the sport watches to just to be so common you can't own an iPhone without it. And that's what they're going for. And the stainless steel ones are going to be somewhere in the middle. I think they're going to be priced where young professionals can afford them if they want to, but will easily be able to justify not getting them because they're just out of their price range. You got to save for it, but you can't, you know. Whereas I think the gold ones they want for people with an unbelievable amount of disposable income, people that can afford $5,000 a year on a watch. I think that's my gut. But we'll know tomorrow. We'll know tomorrow.
All right. So what are you going with? You're thinking stainless steel, like the black stainless steel,
no.
Space gray. No. Oh wait, that's aluminum.
No. They call it I think it's the space gray black though. I'm on.
No, there's stainless steel and then black or space black stainless steel.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I'm going to go for the stainless, just the straight up stainless.
Really? Not the aluminum, huh?
Like I said, I've got my price. I've got prices that I'm not willing.
Gold one does look cool, by the way.
Yeah, I've got prices I'm not willing to pay for the aluminum. Or for the stainless, I mean, but you know, if it's in my price range, I'll buy it. I just think I'm going to want like normal. I'm going to want the most expensive version of the stainless. And although I would be able to justify the cost of the cheapest one, I won't. That's not the one I want. And so what I'll go with is the most expensive aluminum one. But, you know, I think a leather strap with the aluminum body will still look very good, and I'll probably do something like that for my nicer one. Of course, I do like the rose gold and brown, which is a little disconcerting because that's definitely a chick watch. I mean, that's supposed to be a chick watch, but I really like how it looks.
Yes, yes, it is, very much so. I feel like it is. Ah, that's funny. That's funny. All right, dude. All right, all right. That's enough Apple lust.
Okay.
We'll talk even more about it next week because then we'll know this stuff.
When I wear it.
Oh, that'll be great. All right. All right. I'm gonna take this thing home.
Thank you.
Here. So funny. So funny. You're just pumped. I love it. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us, and thank you so much for listening to episode 180, otherwise known as Pi, for those of you who live in the Radiance world. It's pretty cool. We really do appreciate it. And don't forget to check out the show notes at furloughbros.com, and that'll be episode 180. Specifically, watch the Four Horsemen of Tech video, and also go check out that I don't know what the title is yet because you just put the URL in there. But the one virtual reality one, it'll be obvious. It'll be like fifth from the top, I think. And yeah, so go check those out at furloughbros.com. And that's episode 180. Should be good. And my name is James Furlough. My timekeeping brother. Is that good enough? My Apple Watch loving, lusting brother. Is Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.